Direct. From Guano Productions headquarters in the Los Angeles Underground, it's time for your new favorite podcast, The Superiority Complex. It's like honey in your ear holes.
Welcome back to Mad Game, a subsidiary. I'm wearing tennis shoes, my tuxedo. A subsidiary podcast of The Superiority Complex. Your new favorite podcast. I think I say that in the opening already.
So I have a question.
Mm-hmm.
Because Mad Men's got like two more episodes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Game of Thrones only has three, I think.
Oh, okay. So
yeah, yeah.
Oh, okay.
They're both going to end like within a week of each other. So for 1 week, we'll do like it'll be like a 30-minute episode where we just do one. Okay. And then who knows if we'll be back for Mad Game because this could be a one-shot podcast. I mean, it's like a limited series,
yeah.
Comic book. And speaking of comic books, our friends, first of all, I miss doing a full show because we briefly talk about like pop culture stuff or we'll touch on different stuff, even if that's not necessarily what the topic is going to be week to week, but we always find time to touch on something. And so there's so much going on right now that we have not been able to touch on. So I do miss doing that episode, you know, but we will be back with full episodes once we finish this move. And part of the reason is our friends, Mike and Sue from Undercity Comics, who we have mentioned many times on the show. Sue has been a guest here. We've recorded a bunch of stuff from there at Undercity, have opened a new location, a second location in Uptown Whittier. So if you're in the Uptown Whittier area, it's a beautiful looking location. And if you have listened to my podcast and say, God, that's terrible, I could probably do a better job, well, guess what? Mike and Sue have opened a podcast studio inside of the Undercity. They're calling it Undercity 2, as in Undercity T00. Undercity also. But there is a podcast studio there, so if they are looking to use it to rent out, and they already have a lot of people who are interested. It's a really nice setup. You haven't seen it yet, Nicole, but they've got a green screen in there. They've got some high-def cameras. They've got a soundboard. Basically, all you need to bring in is something to record your show on. They've got the mics, everything all set up and ready to go. So we will be doing Superiority Complex from there for the most part, if I have a guest or two to bring in, but we will still be working on building a tiny little home studio in our new place that we are currently moving into. That's still going on. Mm. There's a lot going on.
One box at a time,
but we'll be out in 2 weeks. So I want to have the regular show going, not the regular show, the cartoon show, but our regular show back up within the first week of June, but we'll see.
And having that room helps,
mm-hmm.
because then you don't, there's not a lot of pressure to get the room at the house done.
Exactly. So, because I kind of want to take my time and just do, you know, if we want to do sit down and do things like this, it's perfect for that little size room. Just do some clip-on mics and that kind of stuff. But, definitely get down to Undercity. It's a beautiful looking store. Sue and Mike really did a good job with it. And they're using all their experience. I know a lot of people are upset because there's another... it's causing some controversy because there's another comic book store that's open. It's been there right around the corner.
Dun, dun, dun.
But I would say, I won't mention their names, but I will say that for me, as someone who has gone back into collecting comics, I appreciate the fact that Sue and Mike run a bag and board store, which means all of their comics come in with a bag and a board to keep everything looking nice if you're a collector. And if you think this has nothing to do with Game of Thrones, there is a Game of Thrones comic book, so this does tie in. But we wanted to say congratulations to Mike and Sue on their second store. We wish them the best of luck, because I really hope it works out. And there's plenty of room for two. So many people are into this kind of stuff now that there's plenty of room for two stores. So I really think that it'll do well. It'll take off for them. We have a lot going on in our personal life. The Dodgers got beat today, 13-2. I just realized when we first started this, the Kings were in there. I mentioned it maybe in episode 2, episode 3. The Kings looked like they were done. Down to the Sharks, they came back. They did the reverse sweep.
Yeah.
They forced a game seven tonight with the Ducks, so we will see how that goes. The Dodgers got trounced, having a hard time with the bullpen so far, but I'm not panicking. It's early. We're just setting the scene. It's 100 degrees in Southern California right now. It was 100 degrees today. It's so hot. I'm not kidding you. I don't know if you noticed this. I just used the restroom, and not to get gross, but you can feel when you lift the lid, you can feel like the humidity from the toilet bowl. Like the water's actually, it's really, really weird. But unseasonably warm, I would say.
Yeah.
But, you know, global warming, we're all screwed and going to die. So that's why we should watch TV and enjoy these last few precious years we have. I wish winter was coming because it is hotter than Hades.
Wish we had a winter, yeah.
Last week we switched it and we did Mad Men first, and somebody was like, no, you do Game of Thrones first.
Sorry, my bad.
So we apologize. A lot of the times when we do this, we are so groggy. And
I'm fresh off a nap today.
You took a little nap. I played a little Minecraft.
Yes,
congratulations to the kid who was her school student of the month. She gets her little. Her class. She's student
her
of the month. Her class. She has no idea. Tomorrow there'll be a small ceremony, pizza party. She has no idea. I hope she's not listening. She's upstairs asleep. But we're gonna catch you up. That's all. We're all caught up now. So let's jump right in.
Let's do it.
Let's talk about Game of Thrones, which was, I don't want to skip ahead, but, you know, always, spoiler alert, the last 5 minutes was crazy.
Yeah.
Oh. You know what that was? That was everybody's fantasy. You know, you always have this great speech prepared for when you get fired,
yeah,
or like a breakup speech, or
yeah,
some kind of like, you know,
when I win the lottery,
yeah,
I'm gonna sit at my desk and get drunk until they walk me out. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, yes. It was awesome because I was watching Steve Henry's show the other day.
Mm-hmm.
And Steve Harvey.
Steve Henry is a former coworker,
yes,
of yours.
Sorry. Hi, Steve, if you listen.
Yeah.
Anyways.
In Chicago.
Yes. Somebody asked him a question, and he's like, I want to find the people that killed Joffrey, and I want them to do it right. Because that 30 seconds of watching him choke was not enough. Like, I wanted them to hang him by his toes and to be attacked by bees. He had this whole, like, elaborate, like, thing. So, yeah, like, the end when he gives his speech is just like, oh.
Yeah, that was the ultimate, like, that was the ultimate middle finger to everybody. His sister, his dad, everybody. Even to a lesser degree, his own brother, who kind of told him, hey, don't do this. You know, take the plea bargain and, you know, you'll get off with them, you know.
Yeah, but I feel like he probably knew.
He knew what was up, and
he knew Jamie had to have given up something, or
and you also
promised
knew,
something.
You
so.
Also knew how. Yeah, maybe it wasn't a nephew to his brother. It was kind of like to a lesser extent. He was kind of like, okay, you won't have to do this now. Actually, what it is he knows now. He kind of used Jamie as a pawn because he knows now that the Lannister line will die out, basically, because you know that he's not going to go to Casterly Rock and take his place as the So. I've just had a thought and I can't think of it, but,
Are we starting there? Are we starting right there?
Well, let's,
or do we want to start at the beginning and work our way up there?
Let's work our way back. Let's go back to the very beginning of the episode. I forgot what it opened with.
So we never, the title of this one is The Laws of Gods and Men.
Mm, mm.
Season 4, episode 6. It started with Stannis and Ser Davos.
That's what I was.
In the Iron Bank.
And now the worlds of... We've already had some Doctor Who overlap. And now the Sherlock world overlaps with the appearance of... Apparently, Mycroft Holmes works in the Iron Bank.
Hey.
Which is awesome because...
that's what he does in his
because
off time.
Mycroft in the Sherlock Holmes stories was said to have a gift for figures. And that's how he... kind of made himself this irreplaceable part of the British government. So all of the data at that time went through Mycroft. That's he basically, mm-hmm. you know, he was basically a computer for the Victorian, era British government. So that was kind of nice. I don't know if they did that on purpose, but they kind of
see. And I didn't even catch
it was a
that.
Nice little, but the general Mark Gatiss, who's the co-creator of Sherlock. Played the representative of the Iron Bank, and we saw Sir Davos. Is it Davos? I always forget.
I think it's Davos.
He gave a very impassioned speech for why they should back Stannis Baratheon. And, you know, give him a little sugar. Give him a little sugar. And I thought that speech, I thought that whole scene worked very well. I really liked the idea that, and not that I want to get into a Star Wars Episode One situation where we're talking about trade disputes and, you know, things like that, embargoes. But I thought it was kind of nice to see how the economy kind of works.
Yeah.
You never really get that. Yeah.
It's just, oh, we're just spending
and doing it's all boring. It's all political. And it was really nice to see that, okay, maybe they're going to do it. They're going to do this. They're going to bring him down like they took down Al Capone, man. They're going to get him on tax evasion or something, you know. Like Cersei was saying last week, you know, you can't owe money to these. Or Tywin Lannister was saying, you know, you can't owe money to these guys. So so we open there.
Mm-hmm.
And then after that, we jump to, I'm glad you take notes because I know.
Theon's sister.
Oh, yeah. Man.
I was like, man, I thoroughly enjoy kick-ass women characters in this show.
Of course.
Like.
Because as much as they're victimized, you get a couple of women who really do.
Yeah.
You know, you have Tilda Swinton. What are they called? On Game of Thrones, they call, what do they call the tall girl? Tilda. They call her Tilda Swinton. Bree.
Oh, yeah, Bree.
Brienne, yeah. She's amazing. And yeah, but you get these like medieval, like that's cool. Like, you know, you want to see a little bit of that.
Yeah.
Because so many of the women, you know, just like in medieval times were afraid or just, you know, basically objects, you know.
I just realized this is like the episode of like epic speeches. Like she gives that speech where she reads the letter that Ramsay sends.
Mm-hmm.
And then she's like, you know, until we take care of this, you know, she got the guys all riled up.
And this is a woman who, up to this point, didn't really care for her brother, but I think it was more about the family name.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that scene was great. And then she just basically leaves him because he's brainwashed. You know.
It's too late. She's left it for too
long.
And
now they're going to Manchurian candidate him because they're going to turn him into like this sleeper. And, you know, he's going to turn back to Theon, even though he's what's his name?
Reek. Yeah.
Mm. But really good. I didn't feel sorry for him, for Theon, because he's a you know, traitorous bastard.
Yeah.
But no, he wasn't a bastard, but he was a traitor. And but you did kind of feel like you're like, wow, they really warped his brain.
They really did a number on
him. They did a number on him. They really went to town on his brain.
Yeah.
So he's done.
It was impressive how deep that
Yeah,
went.
They really, I guess, you know.
Yeah.
So, then, you know, then it's like, hey, nope, he's dead. Like, that's it. He's dead to me. And, you know, even though, you know, you would think that, oh God, you know, like, let me out of here. I want to get out. Nope. Yeah. Total Stockholm syndrome.
Yeah. Just, it's a trick and he's testing me and all that. Yeah. Like, tell him I didn't do it. That was pretty crazy.
Yeah, man. It's like a bad relationship. Theon can't get out.
The whole time, like. Pretty much when they walk in that room and she goes, I'm like, somebody needs to kill those dogs. That's the first thing I'm thinking, because that's not going to end well if they don't. And of course, he releases the hounds. And,
I'm surprised they got out. There's still three of them. I'm surprised they got out, which says a lot for the, you know, for his sister and for the soldiers. Because usually those guys could have just been fodder and she would have
run out.
Yeah, just total red shirt. But, they made it out. So that says something about that little band. They didn't all make it, but, you know, at least, you know, in that situation, it's always.
Yeah. I was like, you know, as much as I don't want to see it, but they need to like through the thing, just like stab those dogs in the head.
Yeah. You don't want to, you don't
want to be done.
You don't want to leave them alive.
Yeah.
I think at the time they didn't even think about it. They figured they were just going to grab him and be done.
In and out. Yeah.
Yeah.
They didn't think they'd have to fight him too.
Yeah. And then you had, then from there we jumped over to, what was the next little scene in there? We left.
We got the dragons killing
them. Oh, yeah.
The sheep.
Dragons are getting bigger.
Yeah.
And Daenerys is learning that it's not easy to rule.
Yeah.
And
it ain't easy being queen.
And you kind of learn a little bit about, hey, you know, you can kind of see where her tactic of, you know, where there are some pitfalls just to the way she dispensed justice in the last episode, and just willing, instead of people giving people a fair trial.
Yeah, because there were people, like the guy's father, who stood against it, but she never took the time to know that.
Yeah, and it's just like the knight said, you know, sometimes mercy is more powerful than, you know, because she would have taken the time, but she's like, nope, I need to have blind justice. But it's all part of the rocky road of her learning to be a ruler. And she's, you know, in the book, she's supposed to be, she's basically a teenager and very young. And so this is her kind of her learning experience. But at the same time, whether or not that gentleman's story was true, I'm assuming it is. Why would he lie to the person who's basically queen now? And that negates my argument last week where I was saying she just needs to set herself up, which she sort of has. She's sort of like this, you know. What she has, she's ruling now, but
she's stationed herself in Marine, but she needs to rule there and go back and make sure that those other places that she's quote unquote taken care of, you know, stay in line before she moves forward.
Yeah. Do you feel like what she said? There was like 200 people waiting to hear her, right? And then she was going to listen. So that's got to be like an everyday. You know, listening to supplications of the, you know, the supplications of the populace. Do you think that, you know, they're kind of dragging her story out on purpose. Yeah. You know, you kind of have to make it, you know, things happen so fast in King's Landing and there's so many shifts in power and you kind of just have her, you know, just kind of, they're showing her just kind of becoming this leader where.
Because I don't think you can go, because if you. You go the Stannis route, then that's redundant and it gets boring after a while. It's like, oh, we attack and then we retreat and we're smaller, but we're going to try again or we're still, you know. So I think they're kind of taking a different tact with her than they are with Stannis.
I think the question I was going to ask is, do you think that they'll try to kind of, because I don't know how her story unfolds in the books just yet. Is this something, do you think we're going to be left with a cliffhanger, or do you think this is something where with her, or do you think basically that's where she's going to end the season? It's just ruling across the sea and then we'll catch up with her.
Oh, I have no clue.
I don't see her character really being able to do much. I think they're just kind of they're going to kind of put a placeholder there, stick a pin in her story.
Potentially, but things take U-turns, you never know. Left turns at the drop of
a
hat.
We did find out that Ser Jorah, her faithful right hand, and the bishop in the episode of Doctor Who where the angels have the spaceship. He was initially a spy.
Yeah, so that's what I wrote. I was like, who was the spy? Because I couldn't. I rewound it and listened to it a couple Ser times. Jorah, and I was like, what name is he saying? I couldn't really understand him.
The fanboy, the guy who has the crush on her, Ser Jorah.
Yeah. So, yeah. Interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you find out that he was the one feeding them all the information, and that's how they were getting all this stuff back in King's Landing. It ended up being here, and of course, it makes sense because you know who else would notice? But how was he spying? How was it getting back to?
Yeah,
was he sending ravens? You know, how was he hiding it? But
what did he get in return for it?
Well, he in the book. Which I just started reading the books again. The reason he went into exile is because under King Robert's rule, he captured poachers and sold them as slaves, which is illegal in King. So he was wanted, and Ned Stark even mentions that he wanted to execute him for his crimes. Mm-hmm. But he got away and went over across the Narrow Sea. And so that's how he ended up. He's in exile. But you assume, even though I haven't gotten there yet, you assume that it was either King Robert or like his hand, John Arryn, who also was, you know, the memory has been, it's kind of come up again. He's significant again. But either one of them sent him across the sea to like spy on Daenerys and her brother, find out what they were up to. Because if you think about it, Robert had it in. He didn't want to see the Targaryens get back into power.
Yeah, he didn't. Yeah. For sure.
Especially since they, you know, killed his They killed his girlfriend. Ned's sister was killed. The whole thing that, at the beginning. So yeah, he had no love and was probably, I would assume that he was the one that sent the spy. So reading the books again has been great because it's like, oh, okay, I forgot about this connection or that connection, or, you know.
Yeah.
So I'm reading them, albeit slowly. I'm on the first book. So, but that's what I'm assuming it was him. But they haven't mentioned to the point of where the books and the story meet now in this episode. I'm probably, I don't know how many books that is, 3 or 4.
Yeah.
Who knows? I'll have forgotten it by then. Don't worry. So that was a kind of a bombshell. And then what did we have next?
They had the council where we learned about the spy. And then,
After that, it was all,
Then Varys and, Prince Oberyn had
very interesting conversation.
Yeah, that conversation.
Because you never know what Varys is about. But yeah. But now
he's all over the freaking place.
He's all over the place. But now you know that Varys kind of, does he have his eye on the throne, or does he just, you know, is he just interested in keeping the people in power who are going to do the most for him, you know?
Yeah.
Like, what's his angle? And you know Oberyn has something going on. He's got, there's some revenge issues there.
Yeah.
But I like the fact that he was really the only one of the three judges, because the other guy, you know, was just, you know, Lannister's, you know.
He's in the pocket.
He's Lannister's boy. But I like the fact that he was asking questions, and he seemed to be kind of amused by the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
But also, he was the only one, I feel, that he was being critical and asking, like, you know, asking the pertinent questions, like, you know. So let's talk about
the trial.
The trial.
Good stuff, man.
Man, do you think, first of all, everybody, you know, obviously the betrayal with Shay.
Ugh.
Do you think that Shay. Did you think that that was born more out of, obviously they put her up to it. I don't think she voluntarily, but I think, do you feel like once she was presented with the idea, she kind of ran away with it because she was so hurt at being rejected? Or do you think that it was all an act and that she was put up to it under pain of death and torture? Mm. Not necessarily in that order.
It's like those commercials. It's like, if you experience any of these symptoms and one of them's death.
And one of them's death.
Please call us.
Yeah.
Sure. I will call you.
It reminds me of Super Happy Fun Ball on Saturday Night Live when it was like, Super Happy Fun Ball. Do not do this. Do not do that. Do not expose to sunlight. Do not touch with bare skin. It's like, blah, 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 blah. Do not look at Super Happy Fun Ball. I just thought it felt
very hurt to me.
But obviously she never knew the danger she was in, obviously.
I don't think she ever...
And I feel like they're still going to whack her. I feel like she's done. Like, they're not going to...
Yeah, she was stupid.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
She was stupid to come back.
Like,
do you think they lured her back with the idea that, like, hey, look, you know, we know that he kind of, you know, what he did to you. How did you like a little chance to get back at him? Did she even need any type of coercion, or did she need to be convinced that it was something... Or was it something if she's like, nope, I'll tell you everything. And then just, you know.
I'll tell you whatever you want to hear.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was so heartbreaking because
he loved her.
He really did love her.
You knew he loved her.
And it just, you know, he couldn't. You know, he would have married her if he could have.
Sure.
If it weren't for his dad.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, that was so heartbreaking.
Yeah.
You know, all the other stories and betrayals, you're like, all right. He was a dick to you. You're a dick to him.
But it was just kind of sad that, I mean, it was horrifying almost how all these instances where he kind of was putting Joffrey in his place now become motive.
Yeah.
Now become motive to him, you know, doing this. And, and then that whole scene with Shay was just rough. But I think
like when he turns and sees her walking in before you see her. Like, you just see his face. I mean, the acting he did was amazing.
You knew what was coming up.
Yeah.
You knew what was coming up. And just the fact that he got to chew the scenery for a couple of minutes, just give that great speech where he's like, I loved watching your son, your brat, die, gave me more satisfaction than a thousand.
Somebody on Facebook reposted it, and then I reposted it, and for some reason, they're both gone.
Yeah.
So, but the Game of Thrones website, like, posted that speech. Let me see if I can find it real quick.
We need some trial by combat. So who do you think now, after that amazing speech and giving
him... My first guess is his brother.
I think he's going to have his hired sword do it.
So here he says, I did not kill Joffrey, but I wish that I had. Watching your vicious bastard die gave me more relief than 1,000 lying whores. and it's like, yes, it did. For all of us.
Yeah.
We all got like that same
everybody
sense of relief.
Everybody felt that way.
Yeah, I wish I was the monster you think I am. I wish I had enough poison for the whole pack of you.
Oh, that's so great.
I would gladly give my life to watch you all swallow it. I will not give my life for Joffrey's murder. And I know that I'll get no justice here, so I'll let the gods decide my fate. I demand a trial by combat.
Yeah.
Like, amazeballs.
And then he gives that whole thing about, I'm not on trial for murder, I'm on trial for being a dwarf. This is the way, you know, I've been on trial since I was born.
Yeah.
And, you know, finally just being able to tell his dad, because he figures I'm going to die anyway, what?
Yeah.
I might as well just get it all out. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And his dad did not look too pleased.
No.
Because he basically dropped the nuke on his dad. He flipped the chessboard on his dad.
Yeah.
He basically just flipped the chessboard. Yeah, I can't wait to see who his champion will be.
Yeah, my gut tells me it's Jamie, but then again, Jamie does, you know, he's the southpaw now.
Yeah.
So...
Yeah. I don't know. I think maybe it's his hired sword. But who does he have to fight? Does he fight his father?
I guess, pick a champion.
He's gonna have to fight Jaime. He'll pick Jaime. Oh, can he though? Because Jaime's a king's card.
Yeah, I don't know.
Oh, we can't. I can't wait.
Yeah, I hope that comes to some sort of. To fruition in this next episode. Like, I need more of this. Mm-hmm. Like, that.
We got 2 episodes left?
I'm not sure.
2 or 3?
But, yeah.
All in all, it was a great episode. And this season has been... All the seasons of Game of Thrones are really good, but they're revealing so much as they go along. It's been a really fun season. And...
Yes, I'm just going to put this out there. Don't send me links about who dies in the Game of Thrones books, because I will not read... those links.
Yeah. It gets, a lot of it gets messed up because I just hear people say things or...
I'm so glad, like, I don't work in the public eye because that's where you hear most of it. Like, people talking about it at the bar and stuff. And
I've heard people, like, I've been sitting in restaurants or at a bar and just hear people just blurt, or they're talking about it. And it's like, I don't want to hear this, man.
La, 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 la.
I don't want to hear
it. I can't unhear it. Yeah. You're one who's, like, usually okay with spoilers.
Yeah.
You're like, yeah, just go ahead and tell me. It's not that big of a deal. But this show is so just,
there's so much drama.
Yeah.
So much of the fun of the show is just having, you know, just you going, what?
You being, like, shocked by those turns.
I love it.
Because you went into that second half of the trial thinking, okay, Jamie made this deal. We're all just going to play along.
Mm-hmm. And you knew that it was all... His dad manipulated it all because the second Jamie relented, he's like, okay.
Yeah. So like, there wasn't a moment's pause. He was ready for it. He knew his son.
Yep.
And he knew he would do something.
His dad's a master manipulator.
Yeah.
Ugh.
Yeah. But that was just, wow.
Yeah. So we have a little bit of craziness with Reek. And when we come back in the second half of the show... We are gonna plumb the depths of crazy.
Yes.
With this week's episode of Mad Men. So, on a scale of 1 to 10, what do you give this week's episode of Game of Thrones?
10, most definitely a 10.
All right.
Yeah, I thoroughly enjoyed it. I mean, all the epic speeches. And mm-hmm. Just.
We were waiting for that trial, and it was nice to have because Tyrion was locked up in the dungeon for most of this season.
Yeah.
Or for at least the last few weeks. Last 2 weeks. And so it was nice to have him get out and just really...
Yeah, because he is an amazing character and well acted.
Chew that scenery.
Yeah.
If you want to see a really great movie with Peter Dinklage, watch a movie. And I think it's on Netflix right now. It's definitely on Amazon Prime. It's a movie called The Station Agent. It came out about, I think, about 10 years ago. It was this little indie movie. And that was the first time I saw Peter Dinklage. This was before his little cameo in Elf and, you know, all things he's turned up in. But it's a really, really great little movie.
He looks so different in Elf. Like, it's hard to believe. Yeah.
Check it out. It's called The Station Agent. And if you demand more Dinklage.
Was he in The Idiot Abroad?
No, you're thinking of no. There's another little person they use, Warwick Davis.
That's right. That's
who was he was the Wicket the Ewok in Star Wars, and he was Willow, and he was Willow, and he's like a favorite of George Lucas. He was in the movie. He was in a show with Ricky Gervais, and Stephen Merchant did a show with him, and I can't remember, it was an HBO show, I can't recall the title of it right now, but it was a pun on being a little person, if you want to check it out, you should watch it. I don't think you've ever seen it. It's called The Station Agent, and it's just a nice little character study about these three people who just kind of find themselves, traveling through life and end up at the same place at the same time. And it's kind of a nice little movie. And he's really good in it, very understated. And, then you see him do something like this in Game of Thrones. And he really is, I think, the character, he's probably the character everybody loves the most, I think. I mean, you have Daenerys has a lot of fans and everybody.
It used to be kind of a love-hate thing because he was.
Reading the first book again, because I got through most of it. I just didn't finish it before the series started. You realize that he is the way he is because he's just kind of come to grips with having to grow up with this,
Like you said, he's been on trial for this his entire life.
And so he's lived his whole life.
Because not only is he a dwarf, his mother died while giving birth to him. Yeah. So there's that whole, you murdered your mother, that they keep bringing up.
And then his sister and his brother have a completely unnatural relationship. Yeah. And so how does he fit in? Because I mean, obviously his brother loves him.
Yeah.
But, and his father just sees nothing but, and he says that to Jon Snow. He says, because he said, are you Ned Stark's bastard? And, you can tell the way that he can tell the way with Jon Snow. And he says, all dwarves are bastards in their father's eyes is what he says, So, and he's just a guy that he's very comfortable with who he is. And a lot of times just comes off that way. But, and they've done a really good job of showing in the show that it's all a self-defense mechanism. And it's just how he deals with, the hand he's been dealt. So, it was a really great episode. This season has done a lot with the characters, and it may, the story may not have moved forward a great deal from where we were, but you definitely have.
But you've had moments to savor, which there's something to be said for not rushing through it, because it takes him years to write these books.
Yeah.
We don't want to get ahead of him.
No, you don't want to get to.
And we're waiting,
You don't want to get to the point where, But let's take a break. And then when we come back, we will discuss this week's episode of Mad Men, which was called.
The Runaways.
Oh, that's right. My Little Runaway.
Run. Which I gave it a alternate title.
What's your alternate title?
Menage a Quite Crazy.
We'll be right back with Menage a Crazy, which sounds like a really terrible 80s band, right after this break. Welcome back to Mad Game, presented by Superiority Complex.
It just sounds so...
Sounds like a Disneyland ride, right?
Pretentious.
Presented by Bank of America. I had something on the tippity tip of my tongue that I was just about to say, and it's gone. It's gone now. Mad Men, what the heck?
Yeah, this was another episode where it was like, say who?
I wouldn't say it was a good episode, but it was definitely entertaining. I don't know that it was good, but it was definitely entertaining, and it had me guessing. So we open the show, and what's our first scene, Nicole? Set the scene. Set the scene.
You need to start taking notes.
I love that you take the notes because it gives you, it's like your role.
Oh, okay. Am I the court reporter?
You're the court reporter.
So we it opens with the guys finding Lou's cartoon at the Xerox machine. Mm-hmm. Which, by the way, do you remember when they got the Xerox machine?
Yeah.
How big of a deal that was?
Yeah.
And, you know, how it was like, wasn't it in Peggy's office or something?
And Peggy had to share it. So Lou created a cartoon called Scout's Honor.
Yes.
And so Lou is the obviously less talented guy. He's probably the least talented person in the entire office, and he's in charge of the creative department.
Yes.
And so,
which is just the middle finger to Don.
Well, it's the middle finger to Peggy, really, too. Because,
well, yeah, because
Peggy really should have.
Should have replaced Don.
She would. And if, you know, if it wasn't for the fact that she was a woman. And I go back to, I jump back and forth between hating and feeling sorry for Peggy.
Nope, hate.
But you really feel like she did get a hose job on that. She got hosed on that one.
She got hosed on that because she was a woman in the time, you know, that it was, you know. But also, yes, she could do the job, but she's not a leader of people.
You know what I just realized? It has nothing to do with the show. I spent all this money on mics and extra mics and mic stands, and we're not going to use them anymore. So if you're looking to buy some podcast equipment, give me a call here. Drop us a line at superioritycomplexshow@gmail.com.
You never know what you're going to need.
Peggy is not a leader.
No,
she can be, because Peggy gets in her own head. And Peggy, unfortunately, and I hate it to sound this way.
Peggy's a bitch.
It's not because she's a woman, but Peggy's emotional. And she lets the emotions get the better of her. She hasn't learned what Don and Roger and all those guys do. They just deflect and they drink and they pretend it doesn't bother them. And then
there's no finesse with her.
No. That's perfect. That's the perfect way to put it.
You know, it's just her way or the highway. And
she's easily flustered.
Yeah.
She gets angry.
I think she would have a management style much like Lou's. I really think
she... You feel that way?
Yeah. That just...
I feel like she might be a little more nurturing creatively. I think she might...
Creatively, maybe.
Yeah.
But other than that, no.
Because she's one of those people that doesn't know how to get anything... She doesn't know how to get people to lead except by yelling at them. She doesn't lead by example. She doesn't, you know... And Don was kind of that way where Don really didn't... Don was kind of like this brain, like this creative brain. And so people were in awe of Don.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think he led by example either. But he had a better style because he knew how to get... He could convey what the idea that he had and what he wanted. But he was also very...
And his level of creativity, I think, brought people up to his level and made people want to participate with him.
But he was also very withholding as far as... complimenting anyone, and that's why Peggy had such a problem with him.
Yeah.
Because even when he did good work, he doesn't really give you that.
There's no attaboy.
There's no attaboy. His attaboy is, hey, we got this account. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And that's it. Like, you know, you're on my team next time. But there's no like pat on the back or, you know, a handshake or anything like that. And Peggy desperately wants that.
Yeah.
And she's certainly not going to get it. She had a better chance of getting it with Don eventually. And she did. She'll ever get with getting it with Lou. So Lou makes this cartoon, and it quickly becomes fodder for the all the smartasses at work.
The whole creative team.
They're all counterculture guys, and so they start making fun of like this. And what I think Lou doesn't get, I think he misses the point, you know, because he's saying, you know, that, you know, oh, you guys aren't American. You guys, this isn't like, you know. Look at Bob Dylan. Like, he tries to use Bob Dylan as an example, you know, and tries to put Stan down for not being as, you know.
Yeah.
You know, look at Bob Dylan. Look where you are. And, you know, you guys are. But he doesn't understand the world's changing. That the authority figure, like that kind of stuff. It's just not. It's not even that it's anti-American. It's just a bad cartoon. It's just not a very good cartoon. It's not very funny. And they don't. He doesn't get that because he's not a creative guy. He's basically looking at cartoons like Beetle Bailey and stuff like that and trying to copy it without really doing, you know, he's just copying other ideas. And then it's not funny. You know, the stuff that isn't funny.
Yeah.
And the lines these guys are coming up with are much better. You know what I mean? you know, they obviously can write, and so that really rankles.
Yeah, Lou. I think he's got the artistic ability because those are all his own drawings, but the rest of it that comes with creative, he doesn't have.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he doesn't have the way with the word.
Yeah, he's a manager of people. You know, he's basically in there to just crack the whip and get people to do what they need to do, but he's not there to really come up with, you know, brilliant ideas.
Yeah.
And we see his management style all over this episode, especially how he treats Don and how petty he is and how manipulative he is and how he does things just to wield power.
Yeah.
You know, just because, you know, guess what? Oh, you want to go home early? Guess what? Now you're not.
Yeah.
No reason. Like, he never asked Don, do you really have somewhere to go?
Yeah.
Never, you know, his whole thing is, no, I'm going to make this guy, I'm going to show this guy who's boss.
Yeah. Because he's mad at Stan.
Mm-hmm.
Stan is the name, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then, you know, just an extra screw you to Don, you know, while we're at it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to make it bad for both of you.
And Don tries to give him some good advice. Tells him, you know, don't make it easy for these guys. He understands.
Yeah.
And, you know, Lou's just like, well, I'm not going to take management advice from Don Draper. Which, to me, the guy's a partner. Obviously, you may not respect him now because he had his meltdown, but at one time, this guy was the top of his game.
Yeah.
And so why would you not listen to a guy who's had a ton of success in this field?
In this office.
With
this group of mm-hmm. people, you know.
Yeah, you know, I know people like that. They'll cut off their nose to spite their face, and that's definitely Lou.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Just to make a point. And then we switched over to, what was the next, we have the pregnant.
Yeah, Stephanie from L.A.
Yeah, so she's the niece, or she was the daughter of the only woman who knew.
She's her niece.
Who?
Stephanie.
Oh, it's her niece.
Is her niece, is not her daughter.
She's the niece of the only woman that knows Don's true identity.
That's not true.
Well, she only knew him for a while. She was the only one that knew for a long time.
The only one knew for a long time.
Yeah.
But both Peggy and, or not Peggy, Betty and Megan both know.
Which was, I don't remember him telling Megan.
Yeah. It was,
But I assume that it, I mean.
I think it was around the time they went to Disneyland.
Okay.
Before he proposed, I believe.
I don't remember. But we're starting to see, we see how fragile Megan is as far as she's in this weird, and it was funny, was before anything ever went on, when they first show the phone ring and they're like sitting there, you know, giggling it up, her and her friend, I thought, are these two something going on? Is she cheating on Don with this girl? And that will come into play later as we see. But you know, she calls and she's like, hey, I need money. Don can't get out and says, go visit my wife. And I think part of what you see Megan kind of like, I mean, she's nice to her, but it's really kind of like, ugh.
It's very fake.
Yeah.
Like, it's nice, and I'm going to help, and I'm going to take care of you, and I'm going to feed you.
It's that Canadian nice.
But there's that.
Because she's Canadian.
That moment when she comes back out, and she's wearing the robe, and she's cleaned up, and you can truly see what a beautiful girl she is. And you kind of see Megan's demeanor change. Like,
do you think that's also because, do you think that might also be like, just because Megan sees her, she comes in, she's dressed as a hippie, right?
Mm-hmm.
She's part of the culture that's going on in the 60s. And then she comes out and, like you said, she's this beautiful girl. All of a sudden, she's Black Canary from Arrow. And she's, to me, it also was, not only was she jealous, but she wasn't only jealous of her as like a, hey, this is Don's my husband. Like, what are you mm-hmm. sniffing around for? And I don't even think that Megan necessarily thought that anything was going on, but it's like, it's someone else to take Don away from, like they take Don's attention away from, but I also felt like, and it's taken me forever to get this point across, but, like maybe she sees this girl who's a hippie. She sees her as a hippie and she's like, wow, this girl really is like, this is what she looked like when she's cleaned up. But like she's not even trying. This is who she is, that hippie that walked in the door.
Yeah.
And she is part of the counterculture instead of Megan, whose whole thing is she's trying really hard to be part of, like, hey, it's the 60s and look at me and I'm, you know, and you kind of get that later on. We're going to skip ahead a little bit, but when she's doing that dance with her actor friend and she's got all these, like, you know, she's got all these hippies and they're playing jazz for whatever reason.
I didn't know, by the way,
the name of that song is called Petite Fleur. It's a really old New Orleans jazz tune, but
I was pleasantly surprised by the song.
I thought Petite Fleur means little flower, and it's also French. And I was wondering if it was kind of a counterpoint to her dance from a couple of seasons ago, where she did that whole, "Hey, I'm young and you're old, and I'm gonna do this sexy dance for you with this French song." And now it's like she's trying to kind of capture that, and it just didn't even come off. Like, Don looked kind of more, like, disgusted with it.
Yeah.
And, like, the only reason I think he came in was because she's like, come on in. But I don't think he had any interest in going in there. Because now you're starting to see Don look a little square. He's got, like, this plaid jacket on. And he's wearing this polo. He looks a little more uptight, which, you know, worked in the early 60s. But now with all these younger kids, he just looks like this square old guy.
Yeah.
Like, who's the square, you know? Who's the stiff? And I felt like... feel like maybe that's why she had such disdain for Stephanie, was because, like, Megan realizes
she's truly living the life that maybe she wants, or she's more intrigued by.
Yeah. I kind of got that feeling too. Maybe. I don't know. I could be wrong. I don't know. What do you think?
No, I think that's a valid point. I'm not really sure. But yeah, it's
because she's not that much older. Megan's in her mid to late 20s, and this girl's, what, 18? So Megan's at a point where she's still feels young.
Yeah.
Obviously, she's going out and partying and doing all this stuff, but she's got more responsibilities. So then, you know, Megan just can't handle it, and she ships her off with a check. Like, here's $1,000. Take it easy.
Which, I'm like, holy shit.
Good luck to you.
Like, $1,000 in the 60s? Like, $1,000 a lot right now.
That's at least, that's like at least $1,100 in today's money.
I was like, wow, that's...
But you know Don's, you know, giving her money. You know Don's kind of her...
Well, she's working.
She's working too, but you know Don's giving her money. You know, I mean, she's working. Is she on a soap? What's her deal?
I think she's...
How much did soap opera actors get paid?
Why would I know that?
I know what Shatner and all... Because I just read that book called These Are the Voyages. So I know what, like, Shatner and all those guys were making per episode. And for the original run of Star Trek, which was 66, so a little bit earlier than this. So, yeah, that's probably like a good, you know. That's
and probably, she's probably keeping everything.
It's probably like
she's
a
week's
salary for her, you know, back in the day.
Yeah.
Which, if you think about it, let's say she makes $1,000 a week. That's $48,000 a year, which now is really, you know, lower middle class. But at the time, that would have been a lot of money.
That gets you a house in the hills. Mm-hmm. And.
So then we have, we cut over and we go back to, I feel like I'm missing a thread.
Well, there's the whole Betty.
Oh.
We meet up with Betty and Henry, and Henry's just an a-hole.
Betty gives the whole,
she has an opinion.
Betty has an opinion, and even though I don't agree with it.
But she had a thoughtfully, you know, her statement was thoughtful. You know what I mean? It wasn't just...
Yeah, for her, it was a very, very, not for her, meaning she's dumb, but for her political point of view, it was well thought out. And she, you know, she gave a reason why she thought that these two things, kids breaking windows and the war in Vietnam, were kind of, there was a correlation.
Yeah.
And, and then she realizes that Henry kind of has to toe the party line and say, well, this is why I believe it, because he's a state representative, so he can't look like he's disagreeing with Nixon.
Yeah.
So he goes along and, you know, Henry's playing politics.
Yeah.
And Betty's just kind of shooting from the hip because she's talking to neighbors. She figures she can be herself and be like the charming party host. And then Henry shoots her down. And really, for even as much as I hate Betty, I've never thought of Betty as a stupid person.
No.
I think she's dumb sometimes, but she's not innately stupid.
Yeah.
I think she just
makes... She's very lacking in common sense and, like, that sort of...
She makes dumb decisions, but I never got the idea that... And a lot of it has to do with the fact that she's sheltered because she's this white wasp in the 60s. So, of course, she doesn't know. She doesn't have street smarts. She hasn't had to live her whole life like Dawn, like, you know, like surviving, having grown up in a whorehouse. Yeah, so Henry just kind of becomes a... I never liked Henry.
No.
I've
from
never
the beginning. I mean, he's...
He hit on a pregnant woman. Come on.
There's just... I mean, they never fully fleshed him out.
No.
I don't feel... But just what you've seen, he's just not a decent dude. Like,
but he's kind of what Betty deserves, but I don't think Betty deserved that. And it'll come back later. And then she she has that great speech where she's like, I'm smart. I could do things. No, but she does say, I'm smart. I speak Italian.
Yeah.
But I don't think, I've never thought of her character as stupid. I thought of her as vapid and shallow. I thought of her as manipulative and shrewish. I thought of her, but I've never thought she was dumb. She's
unintelligent.
Unintelligent, you know. Yeah, she, like I said, she just doesn't have the street smarts. But yeah, Henry really goes really mad.
Yeah.
And then we have, we're back, meanwhile, back at the office. It's a Saturday. Ginsburg's working.
Yes.
He sees Jim and Lou locked in the office of the computer. There's no talking. And then you get another reference to 2001, A Space Odyssey. Now, let me tell you, Nicole, let me give you what the... We talked about the comparisons last week's episode.
I watched the thing you posted.
Did you see the whole thing?
Yeah.
Yeah, last week's episode was called The Monolith, and we mentioned last week that it was a reference to 2001. We mentioned HAL 9000, the computer that goes nuts and tries to kill the crew. There is a scene where two of the crewmen realize that HAL is starting to lose his balance, and since HAL is basically... omnipresent on the ship, the Discovery, they go into one of the pods they use to repair the outside of the ship. And since it's inside the ship and dead, it's not being used, they figure HAL can't hear them. And what HAL can do is read their lips. And so they realize that HAL realizes that these two crewmen are going to try to disconnect him. Mm-hmm. So there's a scene back and forth where the camera just passes back and forth. You don't hear what's being said. You just see their lips moving, and you realize, you put two and two together, you realize the computer is reading the lips. So this is what you see, except Lou can't read lips. So he assumes that
Ginsburg,
Ginsburg sees Lou and Jim talking, and he thinks that there's some sort of, they're planning some sort of rendezvous.
Yeah, I'm like, what?
But I guess Ginsburg had always said...
Because what did he say? It's making them...
unnatural. He kept saying homo. He said...
It's turning them homo or
something.
It's turning
them homo
that.
Because...
It was like, what?
It's making them do unnatural things. Which, to me, was weird for that character. Because you would think that, being a beatnik or whatever he was, you would think that he just wouldn't care. Like, that wouldn't be... Like, he really wouldn't... But I guess at the time, it's still the 60s, so everything's so repressive that idea is so far out there. You know, we live in a world now where it's just commonplace and people are game, you know, and that's all there is to it. But he's so, like, even a guy like that is turned off. And it kind of harkened back to when Don, you felt like Don was going to be the only guy that was sympathetic to Sal.
Yeah.
Back in season two?
I think so,
and
yeah.
He's like, Don was like, nope, and gave him the you people speech. Remember that?
Yeah.
I was like, whoa, Don, let's talk about the pot calling the kettle black. But so this, and someone told me, I was discussing with a coworker, and we were talking about how it just seemed to come out of nowhere that Ginsburg went so crazy. But then somebody reminded me that he had that thing where in a meeting was talking about the transmissions. He was picking up transmissions and he couldn't get them out of his head.
Yeah, I think he's...
Maybe schizophrenic.
Yeah, I think he's had some issues. Because even when there was, I don't know when it was, but there was a scene where you go home and you meet his dad. He takes somebody home, or somebody shows up at his house and meets his dad. And it's very just frenzied and, you know.
Yeah. His dad's a Russian immigrant.
So I I feel like Ginsburg's had problems for
Ginsburg had some issues, and obviously it seemed to me like he's paranoid, maybe a paranoid schizophrenic now. And
those things just build until you...
Until you, in the most shocking...
present a gift.
Probably the most shocking thing since I've ever seen, since maybe the lawnmower episode. Or maybe since Lane did away with himself. That was also pretty... But that was just more tragic.
That was more tragic than shocking.
Yeah, remember the lawnmower incident?
Yeah.
Probably the most shocking thing I've ever seen. Peggy. Well, first he goes over to Peggy's and he's like, I can't work at the office.
And Peggy's hanging out with Julio.
Yeah, Peggy's hanging out with this little Puerto Rican kid who basically Chancho from Nacho Libre. They're just going to hang out and watch.
Chancho.
They're going to hang out and watch TV. You never explain what's going on. Maybe she's babysitting for somebody in the building, but a little chubby Latino kid. And
it's like, does his mom not have a TV?
They never explain.
This random.
He just shows up. Like, this is Julio, and they're going to hang out and watch TV on
I thought he was coming down to, complain about something again.
Yeah.
Because apparently she's also, I don't remember this happening, but I feel like she's, the apartment manager. Because he came down and said, our toilet's plugged. And she's like, well, I called the guy. Why is he telling her?
Maybe her mom doesn't, maybe his parents don't speak English or something.
But why is he telling her? I understand why he's conveying the message, but why is he telling her? Why is it her responsibility to fix the toilet?
No, maybe she's the only one. Maybe he doesn't know how to call a plumber because he's a little kid. And so he calls a plumber. She calls a plumber for him.
Oh, maybe.
He's a translator for his family, and she's the only one that knows how to get stuff done. So she does it for him.
Maybe, yeah. Could be happening. So I was like,
you know.
Yeah, so I thought he was coming to, complain. And then he just, plops down, and she turns on the TV, and it's like, what?
They're going
to
watch some TV.
And then she falls asleep, and Julio takes off. Yeah, and, you know,
he's like, the kid's gone. I love how
Ginsburg wants to mate.
Ginsburg's just staring at her, right? That whole creepy thing when someone's watching you sleep. And he had that great line where he's like, you were dead for a while, and then all of a sudden, all the activity came back into your eyes. What did he say?
Something like that, yeah.
Oh, so good. I'm going to miss Ginsburg, man. I like him.
Yeah.
He tells Peggy it's up to us to try to mate.
Yeah.
And then when it goes badly, he blames the computer and says that it's all built up and he's trying to, you know. So it reminded me of the scene where in Freaks and Geeks where Jason Segel's character is all bummed. Ken is all bummed out that John Bonham died. And then he tries to feel up Lindsay. Remember that? They're making out. Yeah. He feels her up. He's like, what are you doing? He's like, oh, John Bonham died.
the correlation is there because
Ginsburg rejected. He comes in the next day. If you haven't seen the episode,
presents Peggy with a gift.
Comes in as just as
everything's
serene.
Fine.
Everything's fine. As harried
fixed
and as
it.
As harried and as dare I say in your immortal words when you asked me about the Star Trek episode I was watching and you asked me if it was quote. The one where Spock gets all humpy, end quote.
Sorry, Patrick. But he does get humpy in that one episode.
In the one episode with Ponfar. That comes back in Star Trek 3, by the way. Anyway, after Ginsburg is, quote unquote, after he's done whatever he needs to do, he comes in and he's all serene. And so you assume after, you know, after having all this energy the night before, you assume that he's done certain things to alleviate the stress. And in fact, he has when he presents
Peggy with a small white box.
A small white box, which she
and
opens.
And I'm like, oh, Jesus, what's in the box? Like, you already know this is not going well.
You were doing, I'd already seen it. And when I heard you were doing the Brad Pitt in Seven. What's in the box? What's in the box?
Yeah.
So he opens.
I'm checking him to see, did he pull a Van Gogh. I'm like, what?
Yeah,
what?
I was not expecting what it was. It ends up to be his nipple, which he has cut off.
Which I love how he says when he went to the ER, they would sew it. They would stitch it up, but they wouldn't remove it. So he had to do that himself.
Does it himself. Shows her the bandage where he's all bandaged up. Peggy freaks out and tells him to wait. She leaves, comes, next thing you see, is Ginsburg being carted off.
Yeah.
Okay. And he's saying, don't let it take you. Don't let the computer take you. And so you can kind of is, you know, if you're using the two allusions to 2001, is Ginsburg the computer? Is Ginsburg the one that goes crazy? And instead of killing everybody, is he the one that mutilates himself? Is he Hal? Like, what's going on? But obviously, it's the creative versus the...
Sometimes you think things and I'm like, what the...
Yeah. Because I'm trying to still force my 2001 down everybody's throats. Because why else would you do that scene? Maybe it was just because, hey, guys, remember when we named the episode this last week? Now we're actually going to do a scene, an homage. Maybe that's all it was, but I don't know. I just thought it was interesting that in 2001, the character that does the lip reading is the one that tries to murder everybody. And in this episode of Mad Men, the one that does the lip reading is the one that mutilates himself. So is he losing it like Hal? Is he like Hal? Is he going to go crazy and just melt down and then sing Daisy, Daisy as he's being deprogrammed? That's exactly what happens in the movie, by the way.
Okay.
Now, while all this is happening, Don is at the party watching his wife make an ass of herself, and in walks Harry Crane.
Harry Crane.
Our friend Rich Summer, who you can hear on Never Not Funny all the time. Rich Summer's really, my wife and I don't know him, but we've seen him live a bunch of times because he always does Jimmy Pardo's podcast-a-thon. So just seems like a really nice, cool guy. Although, one time when we went to the UCB, I think you were with me, no, were you there the night we went to the little bookstore that was right around, near the UCB? Rich Summer was in there with the other guy who played the artistic, remember the other creative guy, the one that would smoke the pipe that was...
The one that went to Hare Krishna?
Yeah.
I wish they'd bring him back. I loved him.
He was a lot like the character in real life. He seemed like, I didn't want to talk to him. I didn't want to bother him. They were obviously there to do the show. Because Rich Summer was going to do one of Jimmy Pardo's live shows. But somebody went up and just kind of looked like they were going to... I don't even think they were going to say something. They were just maybe headed towards the door. Mm. And Rich Summer was just kind of, you know, like kind of gave a smile and a nod. And I forgot the other gentleman's name. And I hate to tell stories out of school. But he looked like, I do not want to talk to you. And who knows? Maybe he got it all the time from being on that show. People were bugging him. But he just looked like he... with total disdain at this person who then it just kind of turned out they were headed for the door at the same time to go to the exit the bookstore, you know?
That's kind of beautiful.
Yeah. It was he was ready to give the, please don't bother
please, me. I'm a human being.
And then the guy was just
like, no, you're a dick.
The guy just wanted to leave the store. But that's all. Who knows? He could be a nice guy in real life. It was just one of those weird little moments you'll see when you live in the proximity of people who are mildly to moderately famous. But Rich Summer always does a good job as Harry Crane. I've kind of missed him this season.
Yeah.
And so
he
lets Don know. Because he's obviously trying to do something. He's got this girl. He's trying to, quote unquote, get an agent for her.
Yeah.
They end up at Megan's party full of actors where the beatniks are playing jazz and she's doing some kind of weird dance, interpretive dance. And then... this is going to be our longest Mad Men thing ever because there's a lot of crazy yet to uncover.
We haven't even, we're at the tip of the iceberg.
We're at the halfway point. So strap it down to use a Jimmy Pardoism. So hold on. Harry reveals that they, meaning Jim and Lou, are going to go after a cigarette company. Mm-hmm. Now, for those of you who are fans of the show, in order to, I don't remember the exact circumstances, but Don wrote a scathing indictment of Philip Morris when they dropped. He pulled a Jerry Maguire. They dropped Sterling Cooper. It was Sterling Cooper at the time.
Yeah.
And so Don went, took pen to paper, put it out in that ad in the Times, in the New York Times, and wrote the scathing indictment against Philip Morris. So now. That was the first kind of thing that was strike one against Don. And now no cigarette companies will touch Sterling Cooper. So now these guys are trying to go get win some business. But they realize, they know that if they do it, they're going to have to ax Don so that the client will feel comfortable that no one's going to sneak out from the bushes like like, you know, like some kind of guerrilla fighter, and do a hatchet job on their company. So Don finds out about this and puts a plan into action, which we're going to...
But see, I don't understand why, because they're like, oh, then we just fire him. Well, why didn't you fire him before? The reasons why they didn't fire him for his Hershey's chocolate meltdown was still apply. He's still a partner. You still have to buy him out. So I don't understand.
Because I think at the time...
A cigarette that much money... That they can afford to...
Back in those days, yeah. I mean, those were like the number one...
It just seemed like a hole in the whole story. Because
back in those days, in the 70s, cigarette advertising, you couldn't do it on TV. But back in those days, I mean, that meant if they get a client like that, all of the... You know, especially if it's Philip Morris or if it's American Tobacco or whoever, all of the pistons will be firing. You'll have media ads, you'll have print, you'll have, you know, TV, radio. So, I mean, it's a huge account for them. It's huge. It's like getting a car company or anything else. It'd be one of the big ones. And so, I think the reason they didn't fire Don back the first time he did it was because Don was still kind of at the top of his game and was able to salvage the situation. And this time...
No, that was just like two episodes ago.
No. When he wrote the letter...
No, but I'm saying, so just a few episodes ago, when they gave him, these are your conditions of employment.
It could have been a thing where I don't think the timing was that this happened after, like the business came to them after. Because remember, they said we're just talking about doing a presentation right now. Yeah. So they're obviously in they're sending out the feelers right now. So it must have been something that happened, and Don's not in the, you know, you're assuming that Don's not going to the partners meetings now. So it's probably something that just happened.
Yeah, I don't know. It just seems.
Yeah, I think it was after they gave him the ultimatum, or maybe they gave it to him knowing that he couldn't do anything. You know, you never know. But I assume that the timing was this was something that had just come up, like within the past few days, and that's how Don hadn't known about it yet.
Maybe. Yeah, it just feels like a hole to me. Like two episodes ago, you're saying we can't really fire him because he's too expensive. You know, we got to stay married here. And now all of a sudden it's like, oh, we're going after tobacco. And
well, because now they can fire him because they just, you know, they can come up with something and say, you know, because of, I think that's why they showed you that in the thing of Bert Cooper reading him the rules. So they could probably come up with some way to get rid of him and say, you can make it retroactive. Like you've already messed with this business because of the letter you wrote to the New York Times, like 3 years ago or whatever, you know. We can't have that. You're fired. And then they don't have to buy him out. So it looked like they gave him a chance and then like, sorry, you know, you know, so who knows?
Yeah, we'll see. I just,
you know, you of all people know how things can go wrong in a situation where they're like, yeah, well, we're just going to part ways.
Yeah.
You know, not to bring up a sword, so then Don gets back. He's got this news that they're going to try to dump him, and Don's got to come up with a plan, man. So he wants to go home. Party's over. And now we get to the menage a crazy.
Yeah.
What are you thinking, Megan?
Yeah. Yeah, because
Don comes home, wants to go to bed.
Yeah.
Megan comes in.
He just wants to fly home and figure out what's
his move.
Yeah.
Megan being Megan can't now because of this girl. Now she's like more desperate to get like Don to pay attention to her.
Yeah.
So she thinks she's going to give Don what he wants and what Don probably would have wanted a couple of seasons ago.
Probably.
3 is the magic number. 3 is the number of the counting and the number of the counting shall be 3 because Don's going to bed and here comes Megan's buddy. Says, I'm supposed to tuck you in. And he's like, what? Don's like, what? In one of his John Hamm moments, Don's like, what? What are you talking about? And then here comes Megan. And then she's like, we're going to do this. Boom. Whoa.
Whoa. You really got a little excited about that.
I got real excited. And then it happens. And my favorite thing about that whole thing is, because they don't, I mean, there's really nothing shown. But my favorite thing about it is, Megan thinks it's going to be this thing that just, this is it. Like I finally figured out.
Solidified.
I've done it. It reminded me of, the scene in Arrested Development where it's what's his name? David Cross. I can't think of his. I can't pull his character's name right now.
Oh, the Never Nude.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. What? Why can't I think of his name? Tobias Funke.
Yes.
Where Tobias Funke, he was the former family counselor, and he's like, a lot of couples try to have a menage a trois, thinking it'll save their relationship, and it never does. And then he goes, but it might work for us. Yeah, so, you know, like, what is she thinking? Like, that's...
But you were just about to say what your favorite part was.
My favorite thing is the next day.
The next morning.
The next morning. What's the first thing Don says? I can't find the coffee.
Yeah.
It never happened. It never happened. The guy grew up in a whorehouse. What are you doing? Like, yeah. There's nothing. You know what I mean? If anything, you kept him up another hour or however long it went. And he said he was tired. And so nothing, it changed nothing. And as a matter of fact, Stephanie calls the next day. And then it seems like he's more excited to talk about Stephanie. And do you feel like it's like a turning point for Don because like he really wants to help this kid?
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of like him turning over this new leaf where he really feels like he can do something good? Because he really seems excited about...
I don't know if it's a new leaf, but I think he's always had that connection with, and I can't remember her name, Anna. You know, he's always had that really tight connection with her. And
I still say that's the only woman he's ever loved, really.
Yeah, truly ever loved. Yeah, yeah. I totally agree with that. And I think that's a situation where he will always do right,
mm-hmm.
you know, to the best of his ability.
And that could be what makes, because you just see Megan so angry about it. And I know a lot of people were mad at Megan, but I think she's in a situation where she realizes she's never going to be first in this guy's heart, no matter what she does. And that was a dumb way to try to get it to go because it's not going to change anything. And she realized it didn't.
Yeah.
And so now she's just kind of, she was always so afraid of Don running around and doing all that stuff. And now she basically told him, like, what's she going to say now?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? What can she say? It's like she let it, you know, she brought it in. Like now you have no, so she just ruined herself forever.
Yeah, and then the friend was like, oh, yeah, I'm going to leave. Like, I think it was very uncomfortable for her as well because I think she was maybe expecting, you know, a little morning pillow talk sort of thing. Like, let's recap and talk about how wonderful we all were together.
Nope. Don got up and could not find.
Don's dressed and could not find.
No, I think he was in his underwear.
Oh, but he had a shirt on.
Yeah, he had a shirt on.
You know, he's just, he's done.
Got to get back to California. Got
to
get back to New York. Yeah, he's not going to give him anything. So, yeah, that was such a weird... But I guess because you expect it from... you know, you've seen that Roger's doing that whole thing, and like but he's doing it in a real hippie way.
Yeah.
I would assume that just happened to Don all the time. But...
Because he had the one hippie chick, so you would kind of assume that...
Yeah, who knows?
And he smoked out with her a couple of times.
Yeah, I don't know. It was just such a weird scene, and... But Megan's so desperate now, it's really sad how desperate she is. And then, meanwhile, then we get a little more crazy because we found out that Sally got in a... She thought she broke her nose. Sally takes the... what's his name? Henry goes and gets her. And then that's where we have the little breakdown where he goes to get... And Sally always... I am loving Sally, you know, because she... She never passes an opportunity to make Betty feel small.
I love that she called her Betty, too. Like.
But also one of the saddest lines I've ever heard when she's in bed and she's talking about running away. Again, she's saying she's going to escape and hitchhike back to school. And, you know, she's telling her little brother, Bobby. And Bobby just says, my stomach hurts all the time. Like, oh, it's so heartbreaking.
Yeah.
Like having to live with Betty. And we saw what Betty does to him a couple, you know, was it last week?
Yeah, a couple weeks ago with the picnic at the field trip and just,
poor Bobby. Those kids.
Yeah.
I think they're better off with Don. Because Don at least could pull the Sean Connery line in Last Crusade when he's like, did I ever tell you to eat up, do your homework, wash behind your ears? No, I left you alone, and I taught you self-reliance.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what Don just lets them be, kind of, which is bad, or, I mean, it's good in a way, but it's not.
I mean, I think they wouldn't be running the streets or anything crazy, but yeah, he lets them be, and he lets them.
And a lot of it is just because he just doesn't want to deal with it.
Yeah.
But I think a lot of it is just that's his style. He's a very hands-off, like, they'll figure it out. You know, I mean, a lot of that's him just being selfish,
yeah,
too.
I just felt like there's that show Snapped. I don't mm-hmm. know if you've ever seen it. It's mm-hmm. about, usually, I think it's about women who go crazy. And I'm like, oh, my gosh, that's Betty. Like, she's a Stepford wife who's about to snap.
Yeah. I feel like she's going to go crazy at any time.
Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah, it was... I wrote a side note at the very end that I really wish with the nipple box
mm-hmm.
that they would have done it kind of a la Pulp Fiction. Like, I didn't need to see the nipple.
Just a glow.
Like, you could have just like shown her reaction to it and then just, cause you could still show his physical body.
He did a Van Gogh. He just did it on a different part of his body. Yeah. It was a crazy episode. And then at the very end, Don comes in and just torpedoes Jim and Lou and just lets them know, like, I know what you guys are up to. And I love it because he's like, if I go out, I'm going to go out on my terms.
Yeah.
And, you know, he knows that they're going to try to get rid of him. And so he's like, look, I'm prepared to leave the agency. He's going to fall on the sword to make the agency look good.
Mm-hmm.
Because he knows, and I think what it's going to do is, I love the line that Jim says, because it lets you know exactly where he stands, because he says, you think this is going to save you, don't you? So you know that Jim has no intention. Like, Jim has now played his hand. He has no intention of ever letting Don be Don again.
Yeah.
And at least it's out there. At least, you know, he got him to say it, you know. Sometimes that's satisfying when you get somebody to, you know, somebody's against you and they just come out and say it instead of playing the game. It's like, well, at least now we know where we stand.
Yeah.
But I love that scene where Lou just tells him, you're unbelievable. And he's like, thanks. Like,
yeah. You know?
And he opens the car door for them and just like, what a great. And it's, you know, it wasn't as good as the Dinklage moment, but it was a small victory for Don because it was like,
it was good.
He went out. It was old Don and he knew what to say and he knew how to just sell it and make him at least look like, okay. You know, at least he's got some, at least if he goes out, at least he goes out on his kind of his own terms. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Or he set it up to where the cigarette company kind of has the option
mm-hmm.
to say, okay, we'll go with you. But Don has to be part of this package mm-hmm. because we do want him to make that public apology.
Oh, he knew what he was doing.
So he's either out and he falls on his own sword or he's in by default because now this huge account wants him.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, he's smart. He does it all the time. He did that with Peggy and Ted when he does that thing where he's like, well, it was kind of personal, you know, and he just leaves them all. And then he's like, oh, it's because it was so-and-so's idea. It was his last dying breath sort of thing. And you're just like, oh.
Yeah.
You know, he turns it in a way where he ends up getting what he wants.
Yep, 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 yep.
You know,
Don knows what he's a manipulator, man.
But people don't, you know, the customer doesn't know Don's getting what he wants.
No.
But he puts it out there and makes it, oh, it was his, you know.
There's so many, and I think a lot of people who aren't necessarily as enthralled with the show as you and I, I think because it just seems like an office, like a workplace drama. Like, you know, it's like, mm-hmm. Like there's a lot of them, you know, there's shows that are about doctors and there's shows that are about cops and they're these workplace dramas. And I think what sets them apart with Mad Men is just that you're really, like we've talked about before, you're really watching a bunch of unlikable characters. And the most unlikable character of all is also the most awesome.
Yeah.
Who knows that it just, you know, he's a survivor. And so you're watching this guy who's a survivor and he's getting himself. And, you know, now I think this is the deepest hole he's ever been in. And you're trying to see him get out. And even if he doesn't make it out, it's fun to watch the way he just falls back on these sort of instincts that have gotten him through. I mean, you know, he goes from changing his identity back in the, you know, it's all part of this instinct of who Don is and who he became, and
the ultimate survivor.
The ultimate survivor. And so it's really fun to watch him.
It's kind of a fun arc.
Yeah, so I'm really looking forward. I think we have 2 episodes left
this year.
And then we got another nothing preview.
Really?
So we'll see.
They're all those previews. They're the worst previews.
They are. But they do it on purpose. They don't want to give anything away at all. What did you think about this episode in general?
I liked it better than last week. Okay. I felt like things actually happened. Mm-hmm. You know, the characters took steps forward.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought it was good. It was a whole lot of crazy all over the place.
I think that's what my problem was. And maybe it was done on purpose to make it feel like it just felt all over the place. You had so much going on. And then the whole thing with Sally kind of seemed shoehorned in there. And the whole thing with Betty, and you're like, why is this going on? And you see that Betty's starting to get, she wants to get out of the house. And we'll see what happens with her. I love that when he just disrespects her, he's like, oh, you're so smart. You should run for office. It's like, why don't you just call her stupid and be done with it?
Yeah.
And I love when she's like, you know, maybe I will. Just like, and normally, like, that type of attitude from Betty just, like, I'm like, oh, God, you're such a child. But, like, at that point, he kind of deserved it.
Yeah.
And it was nice to kind of see her give it back. So, this is, I don't say this very often, but I was on Betty's side this week. At least as far as with Henry. I didn't like the way she
threatened with her and her children's, but... Children's.
Yeah.
Her and her children, not so much. But yeah, her against him, that was...
That's the way Betty likes it. That's my quote of the week.
Yeah.
She plays the perfect kind of teenage girl. Like, she plays it so well. So, hopefully we will be seeing
more of her and Bobby. See, you know... From like season one.
Yeah, she's this little girl.
She was this tiny little girl wearing these little like romper type things. Yeah. And you're just like, wow. Like,
yep. And the show's only 7 years. So imagine where our kid's going to be in 7 years. I don't even want to think about it. So guys, we're going to wrap this up. We went long this segment, but there was a lot to talk about in that episode.
A lot of crazy.
So guys, what did you give what did you give it on a 10 scale?
I think I'm going to give this an 8, 7 to 8, somewhere in that neighborhood.
Okay. Yeah, we'll give it about a 7. It's a solid 7.
Yeah. It's not, it's no Game of Thrones.
No. But, I love the situation Don's been in. It's been rough. So it's been, like I said, it's been a fun season to watch him
kind
of try to dig his way out of it. So we will be back next week with episode 6 of Mad Game. And we will be discussing, I think there's 2 episodes left of Game of Thrones as well, or 3. So one of them is going to end up alone.
Yeah, I'm really bummed about that both are ending so quickly. It's like, really?
Yeah, but we have Sons of Anarchy coming back.
When is that coming back?
June, I think. Yeah. I didn't like this last season.
More SOA.
I didn't like that last season.
I don't care. It was fun to watch.
It is. It's a bad TV. It's a good bad TV show.
Yeah, Mom and I got Orange is the New Black coming back. So
that is fantastic. I did not sit down and watch that, but there's some amusing stuff going on in the background when you guys are watching it. So,
yeah.
All right, guys. So for next time, for my beautiful wife, up until next time, we will say that this transmission ends now. That's the way Betty likes it.